Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be around this great big world of ours. Thank you for tuning in to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM, and sitting in for George Norrie, I'm Dave Schrader. Thank you for being a part of our world this evening. A little bit later on in the show, for the final 2 hours, Michelle Zirkle-Markham will be joining me. Michelle is an author from West Virginia who has written about her experience of her home being visited by a demonic spirit manifesting itself as water coming from nowhere, rain within her own home. We'll talk about this very strange encounter, and that'll be a little bit later on. We'll also take your calls if you have questions for her. In the first 2 hours, we're going to talk about another one of my absolute favorite topics. Boy, it's something that's been a part of my world my whole life. Every movie, TV show, book, novel, comic book I could absorb regarding time travel has always fascinated me. I love all the intricate angles and twists and turns and the possibilities of what time travel means. How can it happen? Is it happening? Is time travel happening around us at all times? And can we be time traveling in our own consciousness? These are just some of the points we're going to discuss with one of my all-time favorite guests. He's been a part of our darkness radio world for the last 11 years. I know he's been servicing Coast to Coast AM just as long, if not even longer. And Jeff Belanger will be joining me for the first 2 hours of tonight's show. Jeff is obsessed with the unexplained and leads a very haunted life. He's been fascinated with the supernatural since the age of 10. And over the years, Jeff has interviewed hundreds of people about their experiences with an approach to the subject that makes the supernatural accessible to a wide audience. He's the writer and researcher for the Ghost Adventures TV series on the Travel Channel, now in its 13th season. And he hosts the online talk show 30-odd Minutes. He is one of the most prolific authors in the field of the paranormal. And tonight we'll be discussing time travel. And we'll take some of your calls later on in the second hour. If you've had time slip phenomena, time travel issues, things that you've seen that are out of place in time, we want to hear about it. But before we do that, I want to mention something that Jeff is involved with as well. For those of you that have been following and tuned in last night, you'll probably know by now that my mother passed away on November 15th from cancer. And it was a swift blow. Came in June. We found out she was riddled with cancer, fourth stage lung cancer that had spilled over to other organs in her body. And it devastated her in a very short time. We lost her on the 15th. And again, very hard to conceive and comprehend that the cancer could be that devastating, that quick, that powerful, but it's true. And Jeff Belanger is doing something amazing this March 2017 in honor of someone he loves that passed away from cancer. He's heading to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro in March to help raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. By participating as a member of Team in Training, TNT, he's raising funds to help find cures and ensure access to treatments for blood cancer patients. That's right, to ensure access to treatments for blood cancer patients. So your donations will help fund treatments that save lives every day. And if you want to be a part of this and help out, we've got a really cool way to do this. He's going to be climbing 19,341 feet. How about donating just one penny for every 10 feet of that climb? That comes to just $19.34. Anything would be great, even a dollar. If just $1 from every one of you listeners came in to help out Jeff, you would be going a long way to help in research and ensuring that cancer patients are getting much needed targeted services to help them with lymphoma and leukemia. So how do you do that? I made it very simple. Go to my website, darknessradio.com. Right on the front page, there's a huge banner with Mount Kilimanjaro. Click it and you can go make a difference. You can go make a donation right now and help be a part of the cure and a part of the answer. So it's just that simple. Any size donation, a dollar, five, 10, 20, or $19.34. That's a penny for every 10 feet Jeff will climb in honor of cancer and to help raise awareness. So be a part of that with us. When we return, let's take a look at time, the concept of time, the ideals. When did time begin? When did we begin to measure it? And what does time mean? We'll talk about that and so much more, plus take your calls here tonight. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, sitting in for George Norrie. I'm Dave Schrader. Tonight, for the first 2 hours, we're going to focus on one of my absolute favorite topics, time travel, time slips, and more. A lot of what goes on in the world of the paranormal, I think, can be attributed to the possibilities of these different types of phenomena, from ghostly encounters, Bigfoot, alien. Could it just be small windows, if you will, into time, different places and experiences in time that we're seeing? We'll discuss that and more with our guest this evening, Jeff Belanger. And Jeff has written dozens of books on every aspect of the paranormal. And again, as I said, he is one of the lead researchers and writers for the Ghost Adventures TV series. He's appeared on documentaries. And now he's turned his focus to the understanding of time travel. And Jeff, welcome back to Coast AM.
Dave, great to be with you, and thank you so much for mentioning my my climb to cure there for Mount Kilimanjaro and the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's heroic what you're doing. I mean, that is no easy task. I broke a sweat just reading what you were going to do. So, I you know, having just lost somebody close to me to this nefarious disease, I couldn't even tell you how thrilled I am that somebody in your stature is going to go do something like this to help raise money in a much needed way. I know your goal is $25,000. I hope we can help that. I know the Coast to Coast audience has been excellent in helping me with different charities with our Second Harvest Heartland, and I'm sure that they can be just as loving and open with you. And again, that link's at darknessradio.com. Just click on the Kilimanjaro banner there for Jeff, and you'll find all the information and an outline of how it goes. And all the money goes directly to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, a 501c3, so that all the money goes directly to them. Jeff never sees the money. It never goes into his hands. It goes directly to the charity, which is tax deductible for you as well. So thank you for doing that. Time travel. I mean, where do you go from? Yeah, I know you've looked into aliens and ghosts and demonic and haunted places. What made you decide to focus your new work and research into time travel?
Well, Dave, there was a lot of factors at work here. You know, I've been studying this stuff, and I've said before, you know, once you start going down the rabbit hole, there's no point in stopping. You know,
right.
you don't go halfway and then back out. So, you know, chasing down the rabbit hole, I started to talk to different people about their experiences, and you find sometimes, you know, one person's demon is another person's alien, is another person's hallucination, you know, and so on. So people were having experiences that sounded similar, but they were being interpreted radically different ways by these different witnesses. And so, you know, when you're looking at all these experiences, you can't help but want to put them into neat categories, fit them all into boxes. And especially with ghosts, a lot of times you could. You know, you'd say, well, okay, this thing just happens over and over. It plays like a movie. It doesn't interact. We might call that a residual haunting. Or, you know, there is interaction. It's intelligent. And you'd say, well, maybe that's an intelligent haunting. But then suddenly I get this email, and it happened, gosh, over 10 years ago at this point. I get an email from someone who said, okay, I went through a really strange experience, and it happened in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And a guy named Jeff Vachon writes me an email, and he says, so I wanted to go play tennis with a friend of mine, and we knew there were tennis courts somewhere nearby. And as we're driving around, we suddenly see a police officer. But the police officer looks a little out of place. Just dressed kind of strange, but still we pull up and say, hey, excuse us, you know, can you tell us where the tennis courts are? And he looks a little confused, too, at them, and like they look strange. And he says, well, yeah, it's just, you know, two blocks down and one block over, you're just about there. So they get to the tennis court, and they pull up, and they Jeff and his friend both look out, and they see an entire scene in front of them. Everybody dressed in tennis whites playing tennis. All the courts are full. And they go, huh, what is this? Like, you know, some kind of old-time baseball thing, or, you know, where people are dressed up, you know, like it's 1930, 1940, or something like that. And so they get out of the car, and they shut the door, and they figure they'll just wait their turn to get a court, and suddenly the courts disappear. Everything disappears. The whole scene changes, and they're left with nothing but just, you know, a fenced-in area, overgrown, you know, and ruins. And they look at each other, and they said, what just happened? They both saw the same thing. They both, you know, interpreted it the same way, and then suddenly it was over. In this case, you know, where you would say a ghost experience is you're in a room and there's your television and everything else, and then this Victorian-era dressed person, you know, wafts through, that thing is out of place. In this case, these living people were the things out of place, and the whole scene had changed, and I said, boy, that doesn't just fit the mold, does it? And then I started doing more digging and uncovering more and more of these stories that I would call a time slip experience, where living witnesses experience a different period of time or some kind of alternate time in our world and for whatever reason, and then come back to our present.
Wouldn't it be fascinating when somebody has an experience like this and we can detail, okay, that would have been around 1932, because that would have been the type of tournament that would have been taking place there. Then going back to research in 1932 at that, were there any strange reports of strangers that appeared that were out of the ordinary, you know, strange reports
Sure.
by the police or other thing? Because you wonder in those cases, who's haunting who? Were they actually reflections into this timeline? They were so out of place that they looked like the ghosts, or they looked like the aliens to these people?
You're right. No, and that begs a big question. You know, it begs a question in our modern times. You know, if you take a historically significant event, like for example September 11th, you know, you take that event, you would almost think that you would be able to look around and find people that seemed out of place. Because if you were a future time traveler, you would probably want to see somewhat significant events, right? And yet, we don't really have too many reports of those. Once in a while, you know, you hear a few things. But yeah, you know, you check the records and so on, and I'm always looking for examples of things that seem out of place in time and space, right? That's what I'm looking for. Now, it begs the question, maybe those people didn't see, you know, Jeff and his friend that wanted to play tennis. Maybe they paid them no mind or whatever reason. Maybe, you know, Jeff and his friend got a glimpse of something that was another time, as opposed to actually being there physically. You know, almost like poking your eyes and nose through like some kind of bubble, and then the bubble bursts, that kind of thing. We don't know, but something's happening, and it's not just happening to Jeff and his friend. It's happening to tons of people, and the best I can tell, I don't know anyone who can control it, but I know that it's happening to folks where, you know, they don't mean it to happen, but suddenly it does, and they are experiencing a different time.
Let's begin this conversation at the start. Time. I mean, what exactly is time? Is there a scientific explanation of what time is?
This is a really big question, and I think that the shortest answer is it's just a concept, right? It's not a force. It's not like gravity. Gravity is a force, you know. Time is nothing but a concept, and if you think about it, it is completely relative. Einstein taught us that. Now, before we get to Einstein, I want to talk about Sir Isaac Newton. You know, you think about the guy that you know, the apple hits him on the head, you know, he gets this
right.
Great idea, right, the idea of gravity. Well, So Newton believed that there was this kind of cosmic clock somewhere. Now, he recognized that, you know, 24 hours a day really only applies to Earth. If you're somewhere else, you know, that odds are it's not the same time, and the universe doesn't really care what time it is here. But he figured there must be some cosmic clock that ran forever in one direction backwards and forever in the other direction forwards. And if you could observe it, you know, the Earth may crumble into dust and so on, but that clock will just keep ticking. And conceptually, he's kind of right. But if you believe in the Newtonian view, that there's just this singular timeline, and we just march forward, you know, 1 second at a time, time travel probably isn't for you. Now, of course, that whole idea gets shaken up when a guy named Albert Einstein comes forward and says, you know, no, it's not, time is only a relative thing to the observer, you know, and he figures out that, you know, time varies, it changes depending on how close you are to gravity, how fast you're going. All these other factors can dilate and move time, and it opens the door. Einstein is the guy that opened the door to time travel. And he also, you know, he was the first to figure out, you know, we know how to travel into the future. We know how to do it right now, today. It's no secret whatsoever. All you have to do is go really, really fast. You get out into space and start cooking at a high rate of speed. You don't even have to go light speed, but the closer you get to light speed, the more time will dilate for you. And, you know, what seems like a year to you could be 10, 20, 30 years here on Earth, and so on, because time can dilate depending on your speed. The trick is, how do you get back? That's the much more difficult question to ask, to answer. Although there's nothing in physics that stands against the idea of backward time travel, there are concepts in logic that certainly argue with it. And that's when we start getting into, you know, like the really big questions. But I think before we get too deep into it, I think we should talk about, you know, why we even keep time, because that's what's really fueling our obsession. And we are obsessed. Our culture is obsessed with time. You know, we never have enough of it. We never have enough free time. We're always trying to manage our time. If you're self-employed like I am, you know, and I know like you are, you know, you can be obsessed with your own time because that's the only thing you have to sell. You don't want someone to waste your time. And the more we control our time and monitor it, in one sense, we've really unified the whole world. But in another sense, we've become obsessed with this thing that's just a concept. And that goes back, you know, the beginning of this goes back really over 10,000 years. And the interesting thing is the claim has been made again and again that farming is the single biggest innovation in human history. And while it's tough to argue with that point, I kind of think that might be putting the cart before the horse. The cart is definitely farming, but the horse, to me, is timekeeping. Because to be a good farmer, you have to do everything at the right time. You have to plant at the right time, harvest at the right time, and so on. You know, plow your fields at the right time. That's what makes you a successful farmer. And though nature will give you some clues, for example, you know, winter turns to spring and buds start to come up and so on. But if you can really hone it, if you can master it, and have some way to keep track of it, you will be a successful farmer. And 12,000 years ago, you know, roughly when our ancient ancestors went from hunter-gatherers to farmers, that's what made our entire modern world start to click, right? Because the only reason you and I can have jobs like we have is because someone else is farming for us, right? Someone's growing our food, so we don't have to. We can do what we do, and these farmers do what they do. And it all started, I believe, because someone started keeping track of time.
The concept and the idea of keeping track of time, you pin it to like the farmers. Are there further kind of revelations of time and the way it was kept? We look at you know, the hieroglyphs. Does it always show it, you know, dealing with like harvest time or that? Or was there other reasons that our ancient ancestors would have tried to keep track of time, days, weeks, months?
Sure. So, okay. So first of all, there was a discovery made a few years ago in Aberdeenshire, Scotland. And they found a series of 12 pits while they were excavating some castle ruins. And these 12 pits coincided with lunar phases. And they dated it back to about 10,000 years ago. And what they figured out is this is a calendar. Now, the moon offers us a very simple calendar, right? Every 29 and a half days or so, this thing runs through its phases, and that's like clockwork. But the problem is that doesn't add up in 12 equal parts to 365 days, and it wouldn't match the seasons. You know, it would start to get off, you know, over the span of months and then years and so on. And so, you know, you'd like to have some kind of calendar that can keep track of the seasons. Now, thousands of years ago, what you really cared about, you know, you didn't care. The day of the week wasn't so important as getting the seasons right, getting the planting, the harvesting, the hunting, the gathering, all that kind of stuff. But it gets more and more accurate over time. So what was just, you know, pits 10,000 years ago suddenly starts to move into more sophisticated systems. And one of the most simplest systems, and the ancient Egyptians knew this, the ancient Greeks knew this, is if you just put a stick in the ground, that is a calendar, as long as it's up and down. If you think about the Egyptian obelisk, like the Washington Monument, of course, is probably the most famous obelisk in America, the ancient Egyptian obelisk, same shape, same size, that is a calendar. It not only can tell you the time of day based on where the shadow is, it can tell you the time of year. So, you know, in fall and so on, the shadow is going to be longer. In midsummer, it's going to be much shorter and so on. So you can just mark the ground, and suddenly you can track the year very accurately as long as the sun's shining. And that was good enough for a while. And the other interesting thing is, as you know, I was at Stonehenge just a couple last month, as a matter of fact. I was at Stonehenge in England checking out the site for the first time. And the thing about Stonehenge is we do believe it's this ancient calendar, but there's also been a great number of bodies discovered buried around there, and the Stonehenge site dates back 4,500 years. This is a sacred site, And of course it would be. If you think about it, you know, our ancient ancestors are getting this calendar down and they're saying, okay, when the sun's here and the moon's here and the stars are here, you plant. And when this is this and this, you farm and you hunt this animal here and you know, you don't hunt this animal here because it's breeding and we want to have more for the future. That eventually wouldn't just be good science, right? It would become sacred. You would have a high priest saying, no, we follow the sun, the stars, the moon, and so on. When it hits our calendar and our calendar tells us to do this, that is dictated by the gods above. It's important, and these sites become sacred.
Jeff, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, the calendar, the sacred calendar, what does it mean? Stonehenge in England, America's Stonehenge in New Hampshire, what do these monolithic sites mean? We'll discuss that and time travel, time slips, and more here on Coast to Coast AM. What a fascinating topic. Who hasn't wanted to go back to alter their past, to change your destiny by making one simple change? Well, we know George Bailey had that thought in mind. He wanted to just erase himself from the entire world, and we saw what those reflections in time and space would look like. Sometimes we don't realize just how important we really are until we start to manipulate time. Is time travel a good thing to do? You know, right now there's all of this talk of something called the Mandela Effect, and we've been chatting about it on Darkness Radio. We called it, Who Brought Kirk Douglas Back from the Dead? These strange false memories, if you will, of things that are out of place in time, the Berenstain Bears versus the Berenstain Bears. Very strange, subtle changes, as though something, a ripple in the pond, has affected time and space, but only some people remember it. Are these truly just false memories? Or could it be that in a cyclical wave-like nature, time is being manipulated and changed all around us? Well, we're going to talk about that topic more in depth as we continue. And if you like topics like this, you're tuned into the best talk show for that. Coast to Coast AM carries on an amazing tradition, and you can be a part of it by becoming a Coast Insider. Just visit our website at coasttocoastam.com. Become a Coast Insider. Subscriptions for 1 year break down to 15 cents a day. You get a lot of great content. You get exclusive content. You get to have chats with George Norrie, the other hosts of Coast to Coast AM, and some of the most fascinating guests in the world by becoming a member and becoming an insider. Plus, it gives you access to 5 years of past archives, so you can hear every show from the last 5 years and Somewhere in Time with Art Bell. So go check it out. Be a part of the best and find out why we are the best in overnight talk radio, heard around the world on over 600 stations. Never miss another minute of the best of talk radio. And while you're there, check out all the great links and all of the projects that George has going on, like Beyond Belief, his TV series. If you love what you hear on Coast to Coast, you'll love what you see with Beyond Belief and beyondbelief.com. That's all at your fingertips. It's a simple click of the mouse key and then the keyboard to bring you right there and check all that information out. Go do it right now during the break. We'll come back. We've got more with our guest, Jeff Belanger, right after this. Welcome back to the show. Coast to Coast AM is on the air. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Jeff Belanger, my guest for the first 2 hours. We're talking about time, the concept of time, how we measure time. And we were talking about the calendar and the calendar time becoming sacred. Talk to us a little bit more about that. I know we had to cut away to the break, but when does the calendar become something that we begin to adhere to and really kind of consider a sacred measurement of time?
So, Dave, you know, there's a site near me in New England called America's Stonehenge, and it's in Salem, New Hampshire, which is the southern part of New Hampshire. I've been up at this site many times over the years, and it's called America's Stonehenge because it is this series of stone monoliths similar to the one in England. And when you go to the one in England, you look and you go, wow, how did these ancient people do this? When you go to the one in New Hampshire, you say, why? Not so much how, because it's not so grand in scale. But it's this hilltop, and I want you to imagine seeing these stones, almost like triangles, at various points. And from a central point, you would line up astronomical events, like sunsets, sunrises, and so on. And that would mark the equinoxes and the solstices, which are the four major holidays of ancient peoples, you know, the time that the seasons change. But it also marks the half holidays, which is the halfway between each of these seasons. So you've got the eight major holidays marked from this central point through sunrises and sunsets. And the thing is, the most interesting feature is not these stones, but rather this plaza in the middle. And there's a series of stone tunnels, and they're not very big. I mean, you'd have to kind of duck to walk through, and they're not, you know, very long. Not good for storage. Some are meant to move sound, and then others are meant so you can get in from one side of the plaza and sneak out to the other. But in the middle is this big stone, and it's the size of, like, a kitchen table. And there's a groove carved in it, almost like the cutting board in your kitchen. And the groove comes to a single point. And the idea is that it's called the sacrificial table. And the idea is it's large enough for a large animal. It's absolutely large enough for a human being. You would put something there. You would collect its blood at a single point. And you ask the question, why? So if you're following the sacred rules of the calendar, which your high priest, priestess, or whatever is telling you, God and our gods have dictated when the sun's here and the moon's there and so on, we must do this. And the reason they say that is because over generations and years, they've honed that to perfection, that this is the best time to hunt certain animals, to plant, to farm, to harvest, and so on. It would, of course, be sacred. And you follow all the rules, and still something goes wrong. And we know things go wrong. You can have drought. You can have blights on certain, you know, crops. You can have, famine and so on, you know, storms. So you do everything right, and there's problems. You have to do something to set things right with your gods. And then comes the sacrifice. And so if you look at a lot of ancient cultures, there are sacrifices. The Mayans had sacrifices related to astronomical events like eclipses and so on, and changes of season and changes in their calendar. The people of New Hampshire, whoever they were, and the crazy thing is, Dave, this site seems to date back about 4,000 years, and it seems to be European in origin, and that just rocks the world of archaeology, because what were Europeans doing in New Hampshire 4,000 years ago? That's the big question.
And then you have to question, were they really there, or was it then put there through time travel, right? Could things have been manipulated that way?
Yeah, I don't know. But I do know that whoever was living here, and we know there were people living in this region, you know, 10 to 12,000 years ago, the Native Americans were here. There were human beings here, with no doubt. And those human beings would have had the same challenges of any other. You know, if you're a hunter-gatherer, that's one thing. You just follow the food. All you're doing every day is trying to get to tomorrow. That's your sole purpose. Once you start to settle down and farm, well, you really can build a civilization. And then farming right, getting it right, that's a matter of life and death. Those calendar sites become absolutely sacred. And as we move forward in time, just marking the seasons and the days isn't enough anymore. We need to start to divide up the hours, because people are working. You know, it was simple. In the early days of farming, you worked when the sun was up. When it went down, you couldn't work anymore. You know, I mean, that made it kind of simple. But how do you tell someone, hey, Dave, meet me at, meet me this afternoon? Well, when this afternoon? You know, and so we have to start dividing the time. And sundials became, you know, a very simple method. And I mentioned that obelisk was one of the earliest ones that goes back about, you know, roughly 3,000 years or so. But more and more time-measuring devices come into being. And the sundials are the simplest one. And then in more modern times, of course, we start to get clocks with gears and so on. We become obsessed with not just marking the hours, but now marking the minutes. And then marking the minutes isn't enough. We have to start marking the seconds, because our world is getting more and more complex. And the interesting thing is, the more we start to mark the minutes, the hours, and the seconds, the more the world kind of gets unified. Because the reason we need to all start agreeing on time is because we have things like trains coming along in the 1800s, thousands of miles of track where, you know, trains are moving from Boston to Connecticut to New York, out to Pennsylvania, and then eventually out all the way to the West Coast. And this is happening everywhere. And the problem was, you've got states that had many, many time zones. Because, for example, in Pennsylvania, when it's high noon in Philadelphia, it is not high noon in Pittsburgh. It's just a few minutes apart, but it's noticeable. And not a big deal until you have to realize everything's confused. There's the train time. Maybe the train originated in New York, and the time on the train in New York is 12:05, and in Philadelphia it's 11:52, and in Pittsburgh it's 11:40 something, you know, and so on. We had to start to get things standardized, And that's when really the world starts to leap forward. When we agree, we need a standard unit of measure, we need a standard time, and then that's in the latter half of the 1800s where the time zones get standardized, mainly for the railroads. But then, of course, the implications were much more global. Once we started having air travel, once we started having, you know, intercontinental communication, we needed to have an agreement. And think about that, right? It's kind of special, knowing that whatever time it is right now, you can figure out what time it is in any point in the world. We're all on the same page that way. I mean, I know the time zones are different, but we have this universal agreement. And so the world gets unified. We get on the same page, we get on the same calendar, and we get on the same clock. And now, I mean, look at what we've done in the last 150 years. We've gone from train travel to space travel, and the clock and the calendar has played a critical role in that.
When you're looking at the whole concept of time and the calendars and the breaking down of minutes and hours and days and nights and doing all this, as you look at it, again, why do we have this overwhelming obsession to monitor time so acutely and so intricately?
Well, a number of reasons, right? On the one hand, you know, we need some sort of agreement. We need to know when coast-to-coast AM is on. We can't just,
right.
You know, it's on later tonight. Tune in. You know, we need to know the time. We need to know when happy hour starts. And so on. And so, you know, standardization of time, the importance of that can't be understated. You know, it really was a monumental breakthrough. And it happened, I'll tell you specifically, it happened November 18th, 1883, and William Allen, who was the secretary of the General Time Convention, was the one who named the date that this is the time we're going to start, you know, we're going to put America on time zones. And so from that moment on, you know, think of everything that could be successful now. Your favorite sports team, what time's the game, right? We all have
right.
to agree on that. You know, now they could start to draw large crowds because everyone knew, oh, the game's at 4 o'clock. We will go there. You know, everything falls into place because of this. And so because we start living our lives by the clock, which, by the way, everyone universally agrees is just a concept. It's a made-up concept that all of us have now agreed on. We become obsessed with it. And I think we become obsessed with it because it's a way for us to measure one of the laws of physics, which is called entropy. You know, the laws of physics, the entropy law states that the universe is going from an ordered state to a disordered state. So, for example, if you take a crystal glass and you slam it onto a concrete floor, it's going to shatter, and those shards are going to spread everywhere. That is the natural order of the universe, from the ordered state, that nice crystal glass that's in one solid piece, to a disordered state where the pieces are just spreading out. That's what the whole universe has been doing since the Big Bang. That's why, you know, we die after we're born. We go from this, you know, egg to embryo to baby to old person to, you know, decrepit, and then down we go, right? Down we go to death. That's the natural order of things. And the clock allows us to kind of measure ourselves. You know, would we be happier without it? Probably. But could we live without it? No, not in our society. We couldn't. We need it. It's critical. And another thing happens too, and this one's a, you know, a big deal, and we use it every day and don't even think about it. Up until, for all of human history, what's really fascinating is we've taken our time from the sun and the stars. That was all of human history, all the way up until 1959. That's when it changed. And we stopped taking our time from the sun and stars, and we started taking it from a cesium atom. That's when things really got interesting. Now, the funny thing is, like, you know, taking your time from the sun and stars worked. We just had to agree on one central point. But in 1959, it was universally accepted that 1 second is now going to be defined as 9,192,671,770 periods of oscillation of an undisturbed cesium atom. That is now 1 second. And if we didn't agree on that, if we didn't have this incredibly accurate clock down to the nanosecond, you would never get to where you're going in your car when you type in your GPS system, the address you're going to. You'd never make it, not without those cesium clocks and the accuracy of them down to the nanosecond. That's why they work, because there's satellites in space that are running on a cesium clock, and our software on our GPS, whether it's your phone or other system, is talking to that system, and not only that, correcting for the time dilation, because that clock on the satellite above our heads is moving at a different rate of speed than the clocks on the ground. Einstein figured that out. It's moving faster, just by a little bit. The software corrects for it, because otherwise you'd be miles off your target, because the clocks aren't synced up. But because of Einstein's theory of relativity, we know we had to correct for it. Now we're cooking with grease, right? We've got GPS, we've got time down to the nanosecond. It is really well measured and monitored. And now, because we're so obsessed with it, it begs the next question: can we move within it? Can we travel? Can we experience different periods of it? Now that we're measuring it to the tiniest minutia of detail, that's the next question.
These moments, and I know we've got a lot to chat about here this evening, and time's slipping away from us already. Our first hour almost up. The concept of time, how interesting, right? As I just hit my 49th birthday, and the concept of a week, you know, bam, it's gone like that. You know, it's been a week since my birthday already. Bam, it's over. Those 7 days are gone. There's no getting that back. But as a child, it seemed the days dragged on, that they took forever to get through. And I was busy. I was out playing ball with my friends and swimming and biking and hiking and having fun. But it still felt like I lived a week every day. And now I feel like I sneeze and I've lost 2 hours of time. And, you know, certainly what helps us is, or maybe is not so much help, but the opposite is all these smart devices. How quickly we lose ourselves in time. I mean, have you ever, you post something on Facebook or Twitter, and then you're just going to look at a few more things, and all of a sudden you look back and you realize your post was 48 minutes ago. And you think, wait, I only read two more things. How can it be 48 minutes?
So time is relative, not just, you know, to the position in the universe, but to the individual. And I, you know, great. I know you're a family man, and you got a bunch of kids. You know, you're at your favorite band's rock concert, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can't believe it's over. That was 2 hours of
right.
show. That's it. I just got here, right? Or you're in the car with the kids, and you've got a 6-hour drive ahead of you, and they're fighting, right?
Right.
Like, suddenly you're like, oh, I've been in this car for 3 weeks, you know? and that's relativity, you know? And Einstein, to quote Albert Einstein on how to understand the theory of relativity, you know, you sit with a pretty girl and talk with her for an hour, and it feels like a minute. You put your hand on a hot stove for a minute, and it feels like an hour. That's relativity. And it's true. It's true in our lives, you know, depending on what you're doing. And that gets to the next thing, Dave, you know, consciousness. Your consciousness is affecting your perception of time. And mm-hmm. it turns out we're a truly horrible judge of time.
Right.
I was at the Boston Science Museum a few years ago, and they had a neat little experiment, very simple. It said, try to determine what a minute, just a simple minute. And what they did, you hit one button, and then they asked you to hit it again when you thought a minute was up. And they said, you know, if you want to do the experiment right, don't count. Don't count the seconds. Just hit the button once and hit it again when you think it's been 1 minute. So I did it. And I hit it at roughly 48 seconds. And you go, well, that's not too bad, right? Only off by 12 seconds. It's pretty good. Well, sure. But what if I was trying to do an hour and I was off by 12 minutes? You know, what if I was trying to do something else? We're not good judges of time. It's not inherent in us, because it is just a concept. But depending on what you're doing, it affects it. But our consciousness, that's the thing. And to me, consciousness is the key to unlocking this secret of time travel, of time slips, right? I believe it's our consciousness that's projecting us or calling in, if you will, this alternate version of our time, of somewhere along our timeline. And as you mentioned earlier, and as I've been saying for a couple of years now, I feel like time slips could potentially explain just about every single paranormal occurrence out there, from Bigfoot to Loch Ness Monster to ghost sightings to UFOs and aliens. All of those things, Dave, what if they made sense somewhere on our timeline, just not right here, right now? And that's, you know, when we see it, we go, whoa, wait a minute. This doesn't make sense, because it doesn't fit right now. It doesn't fit the way we know the universe is supposed to work. Our world is supposed to work right now. Those are the questions I'm trying to unlock.
And when we come back from the break, you talk about how consciousness works in affecting time. I want to discuss a very strange phenomena that not only I've had, but I know many others around the world have had, and that's being a part of a car accident and realizing that in that brief span of seconds, how it can feel like an eternity and things can take place. Do we have the capability and the wherewithal to make time more open and involved? We'll talk about that. We'll discuss actual encounters with time travel and time slips. We'll discuss other concepts and ramifications of time travel, good and bad. We'll do that when we return with our guest, Jeff Belanger. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.